Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm also good. There are lots of good things happening right now, but I mean, mainly shirts. Not this movie
Yay,
that
shirts.
the movie was not good.
The movie was spectacular. What are you talking about?
So I'll just get this out of the way. Bloodsport might not be something I ever revisit again.
You're gonna get a hankering for it at some point. You'll be like half drunk at like 10:30 and be like, you know what? Bloodsport, put that on and just laugh and laugh.
Rightio.
It is not a well-crafted movie, but it is hilarious.
It's definitely a movie.
Sure is. I could make this movie.
Are you sure?
I didn't make this one, but I could. Should probably do a slightly more detailed update on shirts before we get into the movie.
Yes, please.
Because we just did that, we did a little bumper last time, but now we've got an actual episode where it's not just like arbitrarily grafted on, although you grafted it on pretty well, even though we were in a little bit of a strange mental state when we did that.
Well, we were just having fun. you gotta keep it interesting. You wanna keep the audience involved in the whole thing. So I feel like people are probably not tuning that out for boredom.
Well, they're involved, and we need their involvement because we're trying to sell them things. We're trying to sell them a very attractive looking shirt and or hooded sweatshirt.
Yes. And unfortunately, it's not going to be for sale for very long. So you have until January 24th of 2017, and then it's going to be gone. So,
2 weeks, 14 days.
less than that, Dan.
Well, now, yeah. Start to finish, 14 days.
So everyone, move your tuchus and
If you want a shirt, get a shirt. You should want a shirt because they are sexy shirts.
they're pretty neat. If the people in this movie had more shirts, so then I'm sure they would have had more shirts. So that would have been good for them.
Yeah, the response seems to be pretty good on the internet for our various design things, and you did the Canon Films animated glinty sparkly intro thing, which looked awesome, and I think everyone very much appreciated that, as well as myself.
Yeah, and well, that was part of the inspiration. Let's just walk people through the creative process.
Take a step by step.
So we were like, we want to do shirts. And this is a conversation I believe we started in October. And then we said, oh, we want to do shirts a couple of times. And then eventually, sometime around November, I think we started actually designing a couple, kicking a few back and forth. And we're like, I don't know, should we just print the old one again? And I don't know, let's do some other 80s stuff. And here's some palm trees. And like, here's a sunset with the lines through it. You know, the circle with the lines through it. You just have to do it at some point. But we were like, no, none of this is really working. And then it was drawing inspiration from 80s production logos and stuff like that. And Dan drafted the black and white version of the D with the E connection slash F. It kind of looks like a, like if you squint, you can kind of make out all of the different letters of defocused, except for the C. You'd have to sort of flop it for that one. So Dan did the black and white version of that, and there were different variations where there were connections and lines and stuff like that. And I was like,
One day
no.
we'll do a webinar and show all of the various prototype logos.
Yeah, like some of them had like bars on either end, and some of them had no bars, and it was just like, I don't know. And I was like, no, not that one, that one. And then I was like, can you adjust this one pixel? And then, you know, so I was supervising, I guess. And Dan was
They
doing
call
all
that
the,
art directing.
yeah, Dan was doing all the actual work. And then
I'm very familiar with convert to outlines in Illustrator, so it was cool. I like working out my Illustrator skills every now and then.
yeah, and then he had handed over a version to me, and I had dabbled with it with a weird gradient ramp thing, and then handed that back over to Dan, who did a high res version and polished it up, and then handed that back to me, and then we did the animated version, and we liked that so much it became the logo for the show. but the...
Yeah, we didn't really intend for that to happen. We were just trying to make a cool shirt, and then suddenly we ended up with a logo that was super duper fancy.
Yes, it was probably too fancy for the show.
You'll be like, maybe,
we need to listen to this classy show with this classy logo, and it'll just, whoops.
No, it's one of those things. Like whenever I'm trying to design something, I take inspiration from somewhere. I got my little Draplin design book over here. I've got one of those like 1970s logo design books or whatever that has all kinds of like famous logos and crap in it. I was leafing through that, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I guess we could make this sort of like a fancy, iconic, you know, D logo mark thing, and then now we have a logo. It was fun. I like designing stuff like that. Take a letter, you make it interesting, and then hopefully you don't have to put a bunch of other letters afterward to make it look stupid, like my company logo, but this one turned out pretty cool.
Yes.
By the way, as a quick aside, I technically contemplated making Defocused Media Group as a trade name to change my company name because we have the logo first. I could file the trade name in Arizona for like $10, and it's like, well, then we got the logo. So you know, because you got Canon Films, you got the Canon Media Group or whatever their parent company was called.
Yeah. Well, they had an interesting. Anyway, somebody. You know, spend a couple minutes on the Wikipedia page for Canon Group. They were weird. It was a company with stuff, and they mainly made a lot of money on B-movies, and they would rob Peter to pay Paul on a lot of things, and there was some fraud. And
it was a lot of, selling overseas rights before they even had a chance to make the movies, and then when they came out, they were not good, so they didn't make their money back for the rights and things.
Yeah, and we've done a few Canon films, notably Masters of the Universe, where Mattel had to... What was the full story behind that? Someone didn't pay someone for that, half of it, or whatever, and so they had to do the rest of it, and... instead of doing a sequel to that, they had all these costumes and stuff, and they just reused it for Cyborg. So, I mean, the company was not well run, and there was stuff where they were taking some of the money that was supposed to be going to like Superman Quest for Peace or whatever, the fourth one, and they took that and spent it on a bunch of other stuff. So they were not a well run institution.
I don't know. That sounds like a pretty efficient use of props and money. You just, whatever you got left over, you move it over to the next one. That's smart, right?
Yeah. You greenlight something that doesn't have a story yet. You make all the props. Then you cancel that movie. And then you're like, well, I got all the props. So write another story. And then we'll have something called Cyborg. And that'll come out. But anyway,
I think we're going to have to watch some more of those. You know, because when we talked about, because we got the shirt here, we're going to look through, we're going to do a Canon film, Bloodsport, is what we landed on. But they've got a very long list of films there, and we're scrolling through, and I'm looking at all of these horrible names, like Cyborg and such, and it was just like, oh man, we should really do some of these bad ones sometime, just to see how bad they are. But for now, we'll pick with one of their better, more iconic films, Bloodsport. And it's like, oh, Bloodsport's pretty terrible on its own. So
yeah,
I can't wait to see something like Cyborg or what's the other? Cyborg's not the Chuck Norris one, is it?
No, there are a few Chuck Norris ones.
I want to watch one of the Enter the Ninja movies or whatever it is.
Yeah, and they have all of the Death Wish sequels, but not the first one, which was apparently a Paramount film in the 70s.
I watched, I think it was Death Wish 3. They shot it in London to try and make it look like New York. It is hilarious.
Oh, Doctor Who does that sometimes. It doesn't work out very well.
No, it does not.
They have any British people masking their accent to try and be American?
Definitely.
Oh, those are always the best.
And some of them don't even mask it. They just have accents.
Yeah, oh, wow.
And then you get Charles Bronson there, and he's like old and weird.
Yeah, well... He's going to do what he's going to do. But specifically bringing it back to Bloodsport, as you had said, it's a cult classic. I had...
You said that with a question mark on the end.
I mean, it's one of those things that I've always heard about. People have talked about Bloodsport. People have made references to Bloodsport. At least I've been assured that they were references to Bloodsport. But I have no familiarity with the actual film itself, because I was like, you know what, a martial arts movie, pass.
This is the origins basically of Van Damme and his skills and his persona.
Yeah. I don't know. how should I put this? I don't know if this demonstrates all of his capabilities that he may have achieved later on in his acting career.
You mean he, when he wore the Red Lobster suit in Predator?
Well, no, actually, that was before this. I was referring to maybe his role in the Street Fighter movie, or any of his other various endeavors. He's a peculiar gentleman, of some dexterity and questionable acting skill. So
he can't talk, but he sure can bend his legs up high.
Yeah, yeah. He's incredibly flexible, unfortunately, he has some problems with timing. That's not really helped when you have an editor who's also bad with timing. But maybe he just got better editors as he went on through his career. But in this, there's nothing really effective about his performance. It's kind of amazing he can jump up in the air and do a roundhouse kick, but that's not going to win anybody any Golden Globes.
No, I love the scene when he was meeting with Roy Chow. I don't know how you pronounce his last name. And he's looking at him and he goes, "I've always looked at you as a..." Pause, look down at my hands. "Family." Okay. you could try and say that like a person. Was that the rehearsal? Did they shoot the rehearsal and then run out of film?
I mean, maybe it was like an Ed Wood thing where it's just like one take is all they could afford to do.
I mean, it's a pretty low budget film. It says $1 million, although I guess, well, no, $1 million in 1988, still not a lot of money.
Yeah, because supposedly, according to some of the resources we were reading after we watched this, they didn't really have the budget for certain costuming things, and they didn't have the budget for stunt people. So that had to influence their casting decisions, apparently. So they would get people who could take a punch rather than people who could act. And in some cases, they dubbed over those people.
they dubbed over a lot of people in this movie.
It is... The ADR work is not flawless. And on top...
thoroughly flawed.
On top of that, on top of the ADR work for all of the adults that they had cast, there's ADR work for the children that they had cast. And in some cases, they're not really even delivering lines. They were just like, "Oh, wait, we need to explain what's happening in the scene. Let's just have somebody talk in voiceover."
Some of it's slightly off camera, and some of it's just like the kid happened to like take a deep breath at one point, and they just crowbarred some words into his mouth there.
Yeah, it's... I don't understand what happened with that. They're just like, "Well, we cut it together and nobody's talking for 5 minutes. Let's go ahead and cram some words into the scene."
I feel like at least 90% of this movie was shot without actually recording sound on set.
Maybe when they went to go record the sound later, there was a stray cat wandering through the recording booth.
And they could only afford so much tape, so they just looped it. My God, that's weird, right?
Okay. For listeners who have not seen this movie, or listeners who have seen it but a very long time ago might not remember this, I will tell you something that is burned into my mind right now, and that is the sound of a cat meowing periodically through most of the latter portion of this film during fight scenes and moments of intense drama. There is occasionally a cat going, "Row!" And you're just like, what was that? Did I hear a cat? And then like 5-10 seconds later, you'll hear it again. You'll be like, "That was definitely a cat. What is happening? Like, are they near a cat? Is a cat factoring into this? Is one of them like a cat themed person? No, we're just going to pav it over all of the people he's fighting. Is there something cat themed about him?"
The fighting arena is kind of in that weird back alley down a long corridor. So maybe there's just a lot of stray cats in that housing building there.
So they were infested with alley cats is what you're saying.
It's the building is literally infested with cats. Like, they didn't have bed bugs back then, but they had wall cats. Wall cats.
Well, for every cat you see, there's 1,000 more on the walls. Yeah.
But like, you know, they have this loop of crowd noise that's like 2 minutes long. So every 2 minutes, there's a meow. Most of them are way louder than anything else for some reason. And yeah, just it keeps going all the way to the end, even in the very dramatic, serious action scenes at the end.
Yeah. And just to make sure I wasn't going nuts, I typed that in to Google afterwards, and I was just like, please, someone else had to have noticed this. And sure enough, there's Reddit threads about it. There's someone made a supercut of all of the meow noises that they heard.
I put that in the chat room for everyone to watch because it's so good.
Oh, man, it's so funny. Especially the comments on it, because all the people who are commenting are just like, thank you for making this video, because I thought I was going nuts and I had to go find this. I had to go search for something to confirm that I wasn't the only person who was hearing that.
You know, I do have an alternate theory that maybe they did a VHS transfer and it the plastic was squeaky, so every time it like rotated at a certain point on the wheels, it made a squeak noise that sounded like a cat.
Or we always talk about how it's good to have a lot of people pay attention to your products, a lot of CPMs. So perhaps there was a mango somewhere in this film and we just didn't see it because it was off screen and it was attracting
a viral marketing campaign for mangoes.
It was attracting a large quantity of cats.
Oh God.
Might have the highest CPM ever.
I mean, one could only hope. They got to make their money back somehow.
Yeah. That cats per mango joke is never going to get old.
Old. No, never going to get old. It's great.
Yeah. But, so, where should we start with this exactly?
I guess we should save the real world follow up for the end of the movie. But okay, so I'll start by laying this out. You've got this character Frank Dukes, spelled D-U-X for some reason. Ducks. They even make a point to put that in the movie where somebody calls him Ducks, and he said, "No, it's Dukes. Like, put up your Dukes." So every 5 years. Somewhere in the world, in this instance Hong Kong, there is a fete called the Kumite, where there are no rules, and everyone fights as hard as they can. There are three ways to best your fighter. They say a word, which is like saying uncle. I forgot what the word is. It starts with an M. You can throw them off the little platform into the sand. I don't know why they use sand, but they use sand. Or you can knock them unconscious and or kill them. So there's that. Those are the rules. Just those three rules. You can do whatever else you want. And the winner gets, well, in the movie, the winner gets a katana as their trophy. And I guess, like, bragging rights? It doesn't appear that there's any sort of monetary gain for it, or did I miss that?
Sounds about right.
I mean, because they didn't, like, pay, like, a $100 fee to get in there, and then the winner gets all of the fees. So just like, you know, they get worldwide bragging rights as the winner of the Kumite. So, yeah, there's the Kumite. All the best fighters all around the world get together, and they fight I think they made some sort of like, they tried to say something about how it was like comparing all of the styles from all around the world to see which one is like the most effective. And theoretically, like you could like, oh, we can learn from this and blend them together for future generations of fighting peoples. But that was downplayed.
Well, so then I also have a question about what that had to do with any of the fighting training montage stuff that we saw at the beginning of the film.
Well, nothing.
Like in a tree hitting coconuts.
No, that one was really, really weird.
And just shattering some ice stuff.
Well, I mean,
hanging
you know,
from a tree on a rope.
People have their various training methods. You know, Rocky, what's his name, used to punch meat in a meat locker. So you can kick ice or smash coconuts in a tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. It's an interesting way to start your film because you have no idea what's happening. And it doesn't really seem like anyone's doing anything that's all that important or impressive. Shattering the ice is neat, but the coconuts less so, especially
little,
when you're
little ping pong, if I'm not gonna lie.
It's very strange. And they're also like sort of play fighting each other in like a fakey fake way. Like a couple guys go to take on the big guy And then he laughs at them, and that's part of the opening to the film. And ta-da. And
yeah, there's people prepping for the Kumite. And then, of course, you see Van Damme, who is high-kicking a speed bag, which is not really what a speed bag is for, but I guess whatever. He's in the military. He can do what he wants. He's a deadly weapon funded by the military for some reason.
They never really explained his importance at all.
I don't know. No. I guess one thing to get out of the way ahead of time. So this movie, and I won't go into too much detail now, we'll save that for later, is purported to be based on a true story, based on a real character named Frank Dukes. So if you frame most of this movie in the idea that this is a story that somebody was telling to their friends, you can totally see where all of the various exaggerations and lies would go. So he was in the military, but he was a super secret military fighting weapon that they sunk millions of dollars in. He was a secret weapon. And then they were trying really hard to keep him from fighting because they didn't want him to get hurt. He was a very valuable weapon, but he just had to do it because he had to avenge the death of his childhood friend who died. And then that boy's dad took him on as his trainer and taught him everything he knows about fighting. He was a very famous fighter who won the Kumite at some point in his life because he had a samurai sword. And then he goes there. And he fights in the Kumite, and he beats everybody, and he wins and stuff, and he breaks all kinds of records and things. So if you frame it like that, this is like it's a crazy guy with an absurd ego telling this blown out of proportion story. It all makes sense, but he's a fancy military man who kicks stuff real high.
It's a real Mike Daisy of a story, and what was interesting about this is like I had no idea this was.
I didn't either.
At no point during the viewing of this film was I like, oh, wow, this is so real. I'm immersed in the reality of this moment.
I didn't realize that Frank Dukes was a real character. When I saw that, I'm like, I guess that makes sense why they're so playing so hard on the name. But
you keep saying real character. I think you mean real person.
Well, he's kind of a character.
aren't we all? Characters welcome. So,
no, this is not a, we're not on, what, USA or whatever.
No, yes. And this movie is not on TNT because there's no drama. But
there's drama.
Nah, not so sure about that one. But they, it's weird because through the whole viewing of this film until the very end credits when it flashes up on the screen and says this was based on a real story and starts listing off certain stats about how fast he can punch and kick and stuff. I was just like, what is happening?
You expect it to end like just like, oh, well, he goes back. He gets his trophy. He goes back to America and resumes his life as a military karate weapon or something. And then they freeze frame and put all these stats up there and say it's based on a real life. And you're like, what? No, no, no. And then they have that song. Fight to Survive playing where they keep chanting Kumite, Kumite, and you're like, oh my god, what, how is this a thing?
Yeah, well, it was unexpected. But back to the beginning of this film, he gets confronted by the world's worst army actor, apparently, who's like, the colonel wants to see you right now. He's like, oh, okay, I want to take a shower. Long pause. You can't. Okay. Cut to them in the shower. Shower noise. Guy walks in, goes, hey, are you almost done? Looks in the thing. Oh, no, he's not there. Runs across the court thing, whatever, basketball area. There were people training. And then goes to the colonel's office, and he tells the colonel. And then the colonel says, oh, no, you better go blah, blah, blah. Don't come back until you get him. And it's and still, we have no idea what particular importance this man has to the military that he would react in such a way. But
he's so important to the military, and they're worried about him going to this super secret, unsanctioned fighting match and getting hurt because they... have a lot invested in him, and they don't want his 401k to go to waste if he gets killed in some back alley fight in Hong Kong.
Yeah, so
that's about all the justification you can come up with.
Yeah, cut to Jean-Claude Van Damme walking up to a house, a door opens, and there is a lady there, and she waits a beat, then smiles, and then cut to him, and he waits a beat and smiles, and then cut back to her, and she waits a beat, and then offers to let him in, and then he waits a beat, and then offers to... He's just like, oh my God, just... What are you doing?
This scene in particular, this must have been one of the early scenes that they shot, because it's just like, there's no chemistry between anyone in the movie or behind the camera. But he like awkwardly hugs her, and he's like, how is he? Like, oh, you know, he's doing all right, I guess. And then Van Damme looks over to see the sword on the fire, well, not on the fireplace, like on a little stand or whatever. And then you get the longest series of flashbacks that I think I've seen in any movie ever.
Well, not only that, but the way this is shot and edited just blows my mind, because there's that push-in on the katana.
Yes, slow and, push towards the katana.
And then it cuts to a reverse angle on Jean-Claude Van Damme looking at the katana, and then it pushes in on him looking at it.
Slow push on Van Damme. And he's so serious looking. And then you have, first, you have all of the aforementioned problems with the kids with horrible ADR. Their mouths aren't moving when there's audio being fed into their mouths. And then, like, there's, like, six different scenes in the flashback, but in between each different flashback, they cut back to Jean-Claude Van Damme, and he's still just staring at the katana. Like, he must have been standing in this person's living room staring at the katana for, like, a good 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, fortunately, through the magic of editing, that was, like, 5 seconds of footage. They just clipped out a couple frames and scattered throughout.
He just looked very concerned for a very long time.
Yeah, I wonder what the direction was. Just stare at the katana. Okay, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi.
Think about your father figure's dead son and how you're going to make him proud by winning the Kumite for him.
Hi. Oh,
you can put your sword on the mantle next to his sword.
Yeah, so...
Just don't cross the swords.
Different movie. But it just goes on forever and has nothing to do with Kumite or why he's in the military. It just has to do with his backstory for why he met this guy and trained with him. And the only thing in here that really has any significance through the latter portion of the film is when he's blindfolded and has to stop the guy from hitting him in the face. And
he's giving him tea blindfolded.
Yeah. And that's it.
But yeah, his backstory is he was just a young boy who had been mixed up with some bad friends who broke into this guy's house to steal stuff. And he was kind of a dope. Like, it seemed like he was, like, blind or deaf or something, because he was just, like, standing there, and they're like, come on, what are you doing? Come in. And then he walks in, and he stands there, and they're like, oh, no, there's a noise. Run. And he just stands there and just stares at stuff. But anyway, he breaks into this house. They're playing with the katana. They're going to steal it, and then they hear a noise, and the kids run out, but he doesn't run out fast enough. And then his father figure, Tanaka, and his son, who later dies, sneak up, and then the kid kicks him in the stomach and stops him from... Well, he wasn't, like, trying to leave or anything, so he just kicks him in the stomach. And then Tanaka, like, says you can't have a katana by stealing it. You have to earn it with your own fighting at the Kumite and stuff.
Yeah, so, and then he slices his hat.
He slices the bill of his hat off with the katana, which is a good move. I should practice that one. No, I should not practice that at all.
No. Remember what happened the last time you practiced anything with your katana?
I was practicing a move from... I was also practicing a move from a movie that is not practical, so I probably shouldn't do that. I'll cut my nose off or something.
What move was that exactly?
It's this... I can't remember exactly what movie. It's this montage of clips of... Oh my God, what's his name? Tojiro Mifune, there was a montage of his movies, and he did this weird sort of like reverse draw backhand sliced, because they were doing like a quick draw, him and this other samurai in the movie, and whoever drew fastest to cut each other, they were standing like 2 feet away, and he did this weird sort of like draw from the hip with the backwards hand move, where you push the back of the blade with your hand, and I tried to do that, but then you got to kind of like cross hands as you draw, and I punched the blade as it came out of the little scabbard. I forget the name of that. there's a name for it. And then it was very deep and bled a lot.
Well, you know what they say. Practice the most difficult move you can think of.
It's not even a real move. Oh, I do still have a scar there on the knuckle. Look at that. Yeah, it's not a real thing. You shouldn't do it. There's no reason you should ever do that. Also, don't do that. But it's a really good video. Anyway,
did you set up a video to record this if it had worked? And there's okay. I was just curious if there was an unpublished America's Funniest Home Video that I needed to see.
No, first of all, of course, I did it, you know, correctly like 5 times. But then the last time I was trying to do it more fluidly or quickly or something. And then I was just like, yeah, I just punched a blade with my knuckle. Anyway, so he bails on his punk criminal friends and now has a real father figure. Thankfully, they didn't go into why he didn't have like a real father figure at home. And they gave this kid they dubbed over the young Van Damme with the worst. It might have been Van Damme trying to do a kid's voice, because good Lord, because they tried to get the accent and it was just really bad.
I couldn't figure out exactly the geography of this, because if this was America,
it is.
He has American parents, and they have no accent.
Do we see his parents?
Yeah, when he goes to Senso Tanaka goes to talk to them and explain the importance of martial science, I believe he says.
Right, he wants to train him.
Yeah, and, you know, because you got to get your parents' permission before you train someone in deadly martial arts. But he gets their permission for this, and they have no accent. And apparently they're in the U.S. somewhere. He has the SF Giants hat on and shirt. So I assume they're in San Francisco. But then somehow he grows up to have a Belgian accent.
Maybe he was adopted. You don't know.
He was adopted and then had an accent for his whole life growing up. That doesn't make any sense.
Maybe he was adopted 3 months before the movie, so he was raised by Belgian parents who died tragically in a climbing accident or something.
That would have been another added wrinkle to this.
Right. So the other thing that confuses the geography is, so he's friends with Tanaka's kid and they become sort of brothers and stuff. And he does this really terrible scene where he's defending him on the playground where bullies are beating him up because he's smaller and young Van Damme is much bigger. But then for some reason, Tanaka's kid dies. We don't know why. At least I don't remember seeing why. He just dies. There's like a picture on the wall and some candles, and Tanaka is sad. And he said that this is his second family because his first family was in Hiroshima. So he moved to America to start over and had a wife and son again to start over. And now his son died. And now he's doubly heartbroken, which is why Van Damme decides to be his new trainee as a fighter to win the Kumite for him and fulfill his family destiny or something.
Yep. Cut to him going in to talk to Tanaka, and he is underneath a very uncomfortable looking comforter, just lying there with his eyes open.
His feet underneath to keep himself warm.
Yeah. It doesn't seem large enough for the bed, actually, which is strange because it's like a twin size bed.
It's so long enough for the bed. It's not wide enough for the bed.
Yeah. It's like some sort of novelty comforter. He goes in to talk to him, and of course we're treated to more shots of Van Damme staring into the distance, cut back and forth from Tanaka to Van Damme to Tanaka to Van Damme 5,000 times. And
it was really difficult for them to get to this hour 32 minute run length.
This movie could have been like 30 minutes long.
It could have been.
Could have. If only there was an editor out there who had the skill and the wherewithal to do what needs to be done and trim this, because it needs trimming. So much trimming. Bloodsport Special Edition. Bloodsport, the Phantom edit.
Is there a... there must be a special edition or some extra footage somewhere, because I sent you that gif of him dancing, and I swear, unless he wears this exact same outfit in another movie, There's some footage on the cutting room floor of him doing that dance in that bar.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to that. I kept waiting for it in the film. I was like, maybe it'll just be during the credits. And I waited through the whole credits up till the Canon logo came up at the very end.
It's a good looking logo.
Yeah, someone should do a riff on that, if you ask me. And so that faded away to black, and then it went back to the menu. And I was just like, no, where's the dancing? We'll hopefully
He's
find
got
that
some
someday.
Sweet dance moves.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been far more interesting than many of the cuts that are in this film. But he has this exchange about how he's going to go do the thing. And so he goes to Hong Kong to do the thing. Cut to Hong Kong. And
there was one more montage of learning from Tanaka all of the skills.
Oh, yeah, that one. Ugh. He breaks the pulley. And to show that he's younger than he is in present time, he has his hair hairsprayed into this weird poof.
It's very big and poofy.
Yeah. they were trying to make it seem like he was younger, but he just seems like he had a different haircut the week before. And not even a different haircut so much as like just hairspray.
It works for him, though, because he's a rather youthful-looking man in this time period. Not so much anymore, though.
No. Oh. Time ravages us all, Dan.
Tell me about it.
He has his little thing with the thing and the stuff, and then there's this exchange where he gives him the sword, and I swear to God, there are 5,000 takes of them cutting back and forth, and I'm just like, I can't take it anymore, just stop it. Just
get to the chase. Good, though. These are the parts in the movie where the 1980s are really showing through, because it's super serious and you've got this ridiculous score, and it's like choreographed as if this is like the most important thing in anyone's life ever. And it's just this absurd scene where he's kneeling in this, like, it's supposed to be a forest, but it's probably just like a public park in Los Angeles or something. And then he hands him the sword and they stare into each other's eyes, and it's supposed to be this moment of respect and honor and stuff, and it's just like, oh my God, it's so much cheese, I could make a sandwich out of this.
Makes me sad.
It's so good, though. That's the best part about this movie, is how bad these things are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, moving on, I just want to get to Hong Kong. Let's get out of here.
He goes to Hong Kong, and then we get a brief scene with Norman Burton and Forrest Whitaker knocking on Tanaka's wife's door going, have you seen Frank? It's very important that we find him. Did he go to Hong Kong? Is he fighting in the Kumite? When was the last time you saw him? Where is he going? What is he doing? And it seems like they already pretty much know where he's going and what he's doing, but this introduces us to the two, I don't know, FBI guys? They have FBI badges or something, right?
I had to look this up afterwards, because I was like, what were their jobs, technically? And according to Wikipedia, they were two criminal investigation command officers, but they shortened that as CID, and I don't know where the D came from, because it's not in the name. So anyway...
Maybe it's not just that he was like a super expensive military weapon or something. Maybe he was just AWOL. Like, maybe he wasn't allowed to go. So they're like, well, we need to arrest you now because you walked off the military base where you're serving. You can't do that.
Unknown.
Hmm.
Oh, apparently it really is abbreviated as CID.
Well, that's a thing.
I don't know why.
Criminal Investigative Division?
Yes. But then they changed the name. But then they kept the abbreviation.
Okay.
It's from division to command. So, anyway, they're not the CIC, they're the CID, but it is CIC if you actually do the letters. But anyway, that mystery is solved.
Sick bro.
And I was surprised to see Saul Guerrera here again, the second movie I've seen him in recently. And he had a little guest spot on the Star Wars Rebels cartoon show. So Forrest put his voice in for a rather lackluster performance for that. And
I feel like he's the most serious actor in this movie.
Yes. And
everyone else is so bad, it makes Forrest Whitaker just stand out as like so much better than all of them.
Well, also, how can I put this delicately? It's really hard to be as bad as many of the people are in this film. And Forrest Whitaker basically just had to show up and be Forrest Whitaker. Like, there was no... He didn't need to do any method acting or research for his role here. Like, he was just a human being.
He laughed a little bit when he was eating some of that food, and then he was very serious and energetic and taking steps forward towards people when he was questioning them.
Yeah, and he took out a taser. But
he took out a pepper mill that looked like a taser.
So, anywho, that short scene, but then we go to a bar, and we get introduced to... Leah Ayres' character, who's Janice Kent in the film. I'm not familiar with her filmography, but she was there in this, and she's got some hairspray. But unfortunately, we're introduced to her via a pan up from her legs, because the 80s and misogyny. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Don't forget, we also meet Donald Gibb, Jackson, the other gigantic fighter who some of us, apparently not you though, would know as Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds. He's playing a karate video game, and Jean-Claude Van Damme is watching him play the game, and then he says, "You think you can do better?" And he offers to pay for Jean-Claude Van Damme to play as player two, which is very nice of him. And Van Damme doesn't graciously let him win for giving him the quarter. He beats him mercilessly several times.
Yeah, well, see... Your skills as a fighter directly translate to your ability to play this video game, obviously.
Sure, it's all about strategy in two-dimensional characters in video games. If you can win there, it's all a mind game, so then you can win
anywhere.
Kumite anywhere, yeah.
Yeah. That's arcades.
Mm-hmm.
So,
from the arcade to the Kumite, that's all it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Focus and preparation.
Yeah.
It's strategy.
Yeah. Just you know, throw a little powder into his eyes there, and he still would have beaten him. Closed his eyes, just focused and concentrated, and excelled at the game because he knew karate. So, or whatever technical martial art it is that he's supposed to be portraying in this, they don't really describe it. It seems vague.
There is a description for what he claims to have learned from Tanaka on his Wikipedia page, which will be in the notes.
Oh, good. So anyway, it just seems like the sort of thing where if you happen to be some sort of horrible liar who is like, yeah, I know stuff and I want to make it sound really, really cool, then you just like make up a bunch of things. And that's kind of what it sounds like, because there's stuff in here like death touch and stuff that don't really, I don't know. Anyway, it's a little silly, more than a little silly. It seems like the kind of thing you would fabricate if you are only familiar with martial arts through movies. But that I'm not accusing anybody of anything. Allegedly, he lied about everything in his life. But whatever. and so he gets introduced and they become fast friends. And is this where he stops the guy from hitting on her at the thing? Or is that like a scene later after this?
There are a couple of scenes in the lobby of the hotel where he hangs out with Jackson, and then he meets what's his little buddy who's his tour guide?
Lee? Was that Lee? I thought his name was Lee.
I don't remember. So there's the little guy who's going to be their tour guide, make sure they don't get in any trouble around the town because they're supposed to be saving themselves for the Kumite. That sounded weird. But. they go around, they see some stuff, and then they're back in the hotel lobby, and then Janice is being hit on by some guy who I'm not going to describe his character because it was, again, getting back to the ping pong stuff.
Yeah, this is not a sensitive film.
No, they're just like, how can we represent people from all around the world? I know, we'll put a headdress on him or something, and then he'll be from the Middle East. And it's like,
How that works.
No, it's not how that works. So then he's like, hey, you should stop hitting on her. Well, because he goes to slap her, and then he doesn't go to slap her. He lifts his arm up in the least convincing way possible, and Jean-Claude Van Damme very, very softly grabs his wrist and says, don't do that. He wasn't going to do it anyway because he's a bad actor. And he says, don't hit her. He says something like, you know, he'll do the Bruce Lee thing. Yeah, I'll put a coin in your hand, and if I can snatch it out of your hand, she's mine. And if I can't, you get to keep her. And it's like, hey, guys, I'm a grown adult over here. You shouldn't be like trading me like a card or something. But
yeah.
He does the Bruce Lee thing where he tries to snatch the coin out of his hand, and the guy's like, ha, he didn't get it. He's like, look at it. I totally, not only did I get the coin out of your hand, but I changed the coin in your hand. And the guy's like, oh, darn, you bested me. I guess she's your property now. And then he leaves. He's all angry, and he's got a gold tooth, and we'll see him again later when his gold tooth gets punched out and some guy keeps it and then bites it to see if it's real, which is gross. You shouldn't do that because it was in the other guy's mouth.
Yes.
And then he meets Janice. And Janice is all like, I'm a reporter. I'm doing a report on the Kumite. I know it's real, but nobody will talk to me about the Kumite. Why won't anyone talk to me about the Kumite? I won't tell you how I know about the Kumite, though. Can you get me into the Kumite? And he's just like, I'm sorry, did you say words? I was just staring into space.
Anyway.
Does he say like, I'll talk to you if you go to dinner with me or something?
Yeah.
And she makes some joke about like, well, I was gonna hope for that other guy with the gold tooth who was gonna slap me, but I guess I'll go to dinner with you now.
This is relatively unconvincing how the two of them were somehow charmed into loving one another before the end of this picture.
They go for a walk and stuff too, right? Isn't that now?
Yeah. Oh man, when they go for the walk, it is the best because he's wearing the worst thing I've ever seen. It's like a brown blouse, and he's got his pants. He's got these.
It's a silk shirt. People wore silk shirts.
But he's got these. He's got these black skin tight pants that are pulled up way above where his navel is.
It's
and
great
so,
because this is the exact opposite of the outfit he was wearing earlier, where he's got like triple pleated khakis on that go like halfway up his chest and the tightest black tank top. Like not even, it's like half a tank top. It's only a tank top on the front.
I think it's spaghetti straps almost.
It's spaghetti straps and then like a backless spaghetti strap, like spandex shirt tucked into his triple khakis. And it's just like the best outfit. That's the one that he's wearing in the dancing gifts that I posted.
Oh man,
he has great outfits. Now, I would like to think personally that Frank Dukes also selected the casual wardrobe for him as well. The real Frank Dukes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, for the fighting wardrobe, apparently he selected. something he felt like he had popularized, which was that he'd invented his own uniform, which are basically modified bicycle shorts, and that this film really brought that to the masses.
Thanks. Part of that's true. I mean, basically everyone in mixed martial arts and in the UFC things where everyone punches each other until they have brain damage, they all basically wear bicycle shorts. Whether he invented that or not, I doubt that.
I don't really know. But
it's just exercise clothing.
Yeah, it's just skin tight stuff around your junk. So
I mean, how else are you gonna show it off? Then there's that scene where Van Damme's got his skin tight silk undies.
Yeah, that was weird.
He's got a butt cameo.
Well, it's like half of a butt. It's the top half of his butt that you see before he covers it up. They cut on the action really to when he's pulling the underwear up only over the back of his butt, and he had already apparently somehow pulled it up over the front. It's literally like if somebody had their underwear on already and then they had pulled it down at the back and then they said action and then they pulled it back up again.
He was doing a Copper Tone sunscreen cameo commercial thing.
Yeah, if only a little
more
dog
product
had been
marketing
yanking it. So that was weird. So
that was jumping ahead. That was after his dinner date, with what's her name.
Yeah. Where they decide to have intimate relations.
Basically. Yeah. She's like, let me into the Kumite. And he's like, I can't let you into the Kumite. And she's like, I hope you don't get hurt in the Kumite. I want to learn more about the Kumite, but really I just want to get to know you. And then fade to black. And then like they had sex and it's like, oh, that's what you meant. Then he gets up and leaves. She's like, oh, it's okay. I don't mind that you couldn't get me into the Kumite. It's not a big deal. And then he leaves, and then she shows up at the Kumite anyway. She's like in disguise, which her disguise is just like this weird 80s hairdo where all of her curly blonde hair is on one side of her head. And she's in a dress with some Asian businessman who's there to bet.
Because
not only is this an elite once every 5 year fighting competition, there are grandstands where people shout and bet waving large pieces of paper, which, based on our knowledge of the 80s, could be nothing other than German bearer bonds.
They're untraceable.
Untraceable. But... they're a perfect thing to use when betting on underground fights to the death.
Yeah, well, another weird thing about this is that apparently, right when it gets started, there's, I guess, a chairman or a spokesman of some variety, and he's speaking in English, because this is obviously an English-focused tournament, and he says how this is co-sponsored by such and such an organization, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, really? There's an organization backing this?
I mean, you got to have sponsors. Somebody's got to pay for that trophy and clean the blood off the canvas.
Yeah, and they talk about how secretive and important this is. But then by the end of the film, people who are just in the film casually are just there at the end for the final battle. And they're like, yeah, go on. Yay, we got front row seats. Yay, go. Go, Van Damme, go. And it's just like, wait, hold the phone. So how secretive is this thing? And how exclusive is it? And how difficult is it to get into if you can just like meander on in?
I mean, there's also those other scenes where the US CID guys go to the local inspector, who we never see any of his colleagues. So I guess he's the only one who works for the police in Hong Kong.
But they're like, hey, colleagues are expensive.
Right, of course. We're looking for this guy. He's fighting in the Kumite, and we need to stop him from fighting in the Kumite so he doesn't get hurt. So tell us where the Kumite is, and tell us where to find him. And you can tell the guys, like, oh, I know where it is, but I'm not supposed to tell outsiders, because the first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. But then, yeah, like, later, what's her name? The girl goes there, and she just doesn't want him to get hurt, so she wants the inspector to stop the Kumite, and he finally listens there. But basically, Van Damme is so good at fighting, he beats up the three police officers that they eventually find money for later. And then the CID guys point their tasers at him again, and he snatches one away. Well, they use one, and it ricochets off a trash can lid, and then he snatches the other one. And they're basically like, well, we can't beat you in fighting, so I guess we'll let you fight in the Kumite, even though we're trying so hard to not have you fight in the Kumite, but we'll be there to cheer you on because we really want you to win.
It's very strange. It doesn't make any sense.
If you can't beat him, join him, basically.
Yeah. We give up. We're your biggest fans now. And it's a heck of a pivot. That scene is also strange because there are no consequences for his behavior with these police officers who are trying to stop him.
Well, we have no idea why they're trying to stop him in the first place.
No, it doesn't really seem like he's done anything illegal, but they're moving in to stop him, and he knocks one of them out with a duffel bag, and then the other one, he kicks with a shoe in the throat. That seems like the kind of thing that you don't just go, oh, shucks, sorry, we didn't catch you, pal. I'll go cheer you on today. But, you know, he didn't show up at the battle, so maybe he was just hanging out at the hospital afterwards, and he was a little sore.
By the way, it's incredibly difficult to find an image of Jean-Claude Van Damme's butt from Bloodsport, but I did manage to find a GIF and put it in the chat room for you.
Oh, thank God. I was really worried there for a second.
Oh, wait, here's a better one. I'll put this one in the chat.
We have dueling butt GIFs. Okay. They flopped it.
Yeah, this one is not flopped, and it's also widescreen. It's not flopped or cropped.
No. Oh. Yeah, well, you don't want to flop or crop your
butt. No flopping or cropping in the butt area.
Oh, dear.
Who wears maroon underwear, of all things?
I have a pair of maroon underwear, but they're really? The boxer briefs. They're not They're not brief briefs. Those are some briefs that he's got there.
A.F. Waller is quoting us the historical size of bearer bonds in the chat room.
Oh, really?
Oh, he's comparing it to the yen note from the 80s. Huh. So, somewhat similar. I still maintain that these were probably German bearer bonds.
I think they're probably yen.
It's completely unsubstantiated. That's what I want to go with. It's my fake movie. I'll cry if I want to. I gotta close this tab.
just staring at it. It's mesmerizing.
It's very shiny and muscular and flexing every muscle in his body.
Yeah, I mean, the light from that weird little dome light thing really just glistens off of his hindquarters.
You can tell that this movie was directed by a second unit director who did a lot of important stuff as second unit director, but this was his third and last movie that he directed.
I wonder why.
I don't know. It was a cult classic, and it made $11 million, and they spent one.
Well, you know the guy who did the music?
Not personally.
Well, yes, that's what I meant. Paul Herzog. Because the music is so amazing. I just wanted to look up why I wasn't familiar with his entire oeuvre. Apparently, he's done film scores for My Chauffeur, Bloodsport, Kickboxer, and Breathing Fire. And do you know what Kickboxer is?
I've seen that.
It's produced and directed by Mark Dasal, who was the producer on Bloodsport. And it's also co-directed by David Wirth. And I don't know who that is, but I'm going to guess that David Wirth was actually there for most of the technical directing and Mark Dasal was there for most of the ego. And it's based on a story by Mark Dasal and Jean-Claude Van Damme. And so you know it's going to be good. And that one stars...
Oh, it was just 1 year later.
That one stars Jean-Claude Van Damme, and it's by The Cannon Group.
Nice.
Yeah.
Newt Arnold, who directed this movie, was the second unit director on Godfather Part 2, Blade Runner, Goonies, The Abyss. He did a lot of important stuff as a second unit director.
Well, he didn't learn anything from any of those important directors.
he directed in 1962, Hands of a Stranger, 1971, Bloodthirst, which if you look at the poster for Bloodthirst, it is magnificent, and the 1988 Bloodsport, and then that was it. So once every 10, 15 years, he got to direct a movie three times, and then he was done.
Hmm.
But his second movie, Bloodthirst, it looks like... Oh, wait, I'm going to read the... it looks like a Goosebumps trailer, but with lots of blood. Let's see what it says here. A sex crime specialist from New York travels to the Philippines to help his friend, a Manila homicide detective, solve a series of murders. So there's like this giant monster with like a melting brain for a head who is cutting up and draining the blood out of some woman into a bowl.
Well, that's a thing.
It looks very much like a Toxic Avenger kind of thing.
Okay.
Anyway.
Not doing that movie on this podcast. But so anyway, moving on. There's fighting and stuff, and people are fighting and things. And there's a lot of slow motion stage kicks and stage punches where you can... see that they don't connect because of the way the camera angle doesn't hide the fact that they don't connect. So that's good to watch for several frames as they just sort of come near each other and then
it's
move
away. It's a shame
they
didn't have video playback back then because it happened so fast in real time, you wouldn't really be able to know what the slow-mo looked like. Just had to roll with it.
Yeah, well, except you'd know that you were facing the thing that you were trying to capture in slow motion, so maybe it would be iffy if you would get it right, and you should probably do it on the other side.
It's hard to tell when it's going by so fast. Can't tell if okay. The timing doesn't quite work for a frame or two.
Yeah, well, no, but what I mean is if you had staged it so that the camera was on the opposite angle from where the kick was happening, if the connection spot was behind the head, and then you saw it swing through on the other side afterwards, then you wouldn't know that it didn't connect, because you can't see it not connect.
Mm-hmm.
But because the camera is on the same side where it's supposed to be connecting and you're just staring at the connection point, then you know it doesn't connect. And so
it also didn't help that he kicked in sort of one direction and the guy jumped in kind of a different direction.
Yeah, well, there are a few of those, like when What's-His-Face throws a guy off of the platform thing and he throws him face first, arms flailing, completely prone, and then he lands on his back because he somehow... grabbed onto the force of gravity and spun himself around midair and then dropped himself. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
He did a kickflip with his body.
Yes, with nothing to kick off of. That's not how that works. But anyway, they do all this stuff, and there's cats meowing, and there's, I don't want you to fight, and I gotta fight, and there's montages, and he's on a bus, and then he thinks he sees the guy, and he smiles, but he's not really there. It's just a reflection. His mind is playing tricks on him, and there's more montages about things we saw 3 minutes ago, and the police are trying to get them and stuff, and they run across boats, and as I believe you had said to me, real Keystone Cops moment. It's not good. It's really slapsticky, and basically everything is played like he runs down some stretch of an alley or a street, and we know when the camera started rolling because we can see when they start to pick up speed, and we know when the camera stops rolling because we can see them slow down towards the end, and then they cut to another angle and they do the same thing over again, and at no point are the agents getting any closer to Jean-Claude Van Damme, nor is Jean-Claude Van Damme getting any further away from them, because we just keep setting up the same thing as if they had been equidistant the entire time, because we're just cutting to a new setup on each occasion. So it's really poorly shot. And he, for some reason, mugs back to them, like stops and like is like, oh, hey, you can't catch me. And then stands there for a couple seconds, and then they run up, and then he runs again. And it's just like, ugh, good grief. But then he finally gets across with the boats and stuff, and then they can't get across, and then they fall in the water. Oh, LOL.
Hopefully they didn't have their tasers on them then.
Well, they did.
Well,
hopefully they're in
the pockets. Were waterproof then, I guess.
Yeah. It's pretty ridiculous. But then we finally get to a very important scene where What's-His-Face is going to square off against Chong Li. And we know from some weird exposition earlier on that Chong Li apparently is a cold-blooded murderer in this and like kills people, and that makes him bad. Worse than all these other people who just hurt other people.
And he has the record for knockouts, 14 seconds or whatever, and then Van Damme beats his record, and that makes Chong Li very angry. So he's going to get back at him later. But yeah, he's a bad guy. Not only is he the best fighter, he doesn't mind if he kills his opponent. And I got to say, he's pretty awesome bad guy. He's pretty iconic. I've remembered him more than basically anything else in this movie. Well, aside from the face Van Damme makes when he gets the powder in his eyes. But
such a face.
Bolo Yang, is that how you pronounce it? Anyway, he is magnificent in this movie and terrifying. Although, pretty certain none of the sounds that come out of his mouth are actually his voice.
Yeah, well, he does a considerable amount of chest flexing.
He has the biggest pecs, like disproportionately large pecs. So, of course, he's going to flex them at people.
Yeah, I believe they call that a pec bounce. So he is pec bouncing left and right. And then left and right at the same time.
Should I ask why you know that?
No.
Okay.
All right. So he goes to fight him, and they do the fighting and the stuff and whatevers, and he beats up the friend, and oh no, he beat up the friend, and Jean-Claude Van Damme's held back by the skinny waifish guy who obviously can't hold him back. He's like, no, stop, and reaches his hand towards the camera. It's very dramatic. And
Chong Li takes his buddy's Harley Davidson headband as a trophy and sort of dangles it in front of Van Damme's face mockingly, and then just like snatches it out of the way, like as soon as he tries to reach for it, like, you know, come on, you gotta be faster if you want to get it. But he's not. And then he just hangs on to it, and he keeps it as a prize. And he ties it around his knee for the final battle, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, because they go to the doctor at the hospital, and his fast friend of Janice is there as well. And they're both concerned about his current state of affairs, but Jean-Claude Van Damme is trying to console Ray Jackson that... the doctor says everything's going to be fine. He'll be up and about in no time. Don't worry. Everything's okay. Blah, 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 blah. Not much of a reaction out of the patient.
I'm a little concerned for his well-being, because I don't know if you noticed, but the doctor spends 4 minutes checking his heart rate in about 6 different spots on his chest and just keeps going in a circle, checking his heart rate over and over and over again.
Well, you just got to be sure.
Doesn't really seem like he knows what he's listening for.
You don't want to get a patient who also suffers from an extra heart. that would just really mess up your day if you didn't know about that second heart.
I'm just saying, like, you know, there are potentially more things you could monitor than just the heart rate a bunch of times, especially if the primary concern is his brain.
Yeah, well, him doing that, moving the stethoscope around to six different spots on his skull would have been a little strange.
It wouldn't have been much more strange than what he was doing.
Yeah, well, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but they refer to this as business, like giving the actor business to do in the scene. And unfortunately, the director had given him the business of, oh yeah, just act like you're checking his heart. And then the scene's just going to go on forever, and we're not going to think about that at all. And so the actor's just going to keep doing that. And that's it.
Yeah, I would have like checked his heart rate with the stethoscope and then like picked up his wrist and checked his pulse on his hand to make sure it matches and then, you know, start poking the chest looking for soft spots or bruises or whatever the doctor does when he's poking there.
Or have him pick up the chart and check off some stuff on it and then put the chart back down.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. But I think this is a situation where it suffered from the director not giving any thought at all to what he wanted that actor to be doing, because he shot the whole scene with this guy just sticking his stethoscope all over the place. So good job, director
Newt.
So now Janice is all concerned, because before she wasn't worried. It's just called Bloodsport.
It's just called the Kumite, but this is when she snuck in this time with her businessman cover. By the way, she like looks over her shoulder and goes like, this isn't the first time I've had to go undercover for a story before. And then she's like in the stands, and when she sees somebody get like beat up real bad, like she pretends to be sly and pull like a pocket recorder out and like whisper notes into it. But it's like, it's huge, and everyone is like, they're on stadium seating, so there's like nowhere to hide that she's talking into a microphone right in front of all these people.
No, definitely not. This does seem like it is her first time undercover. Maybe she was lying.
It's her second time undercover.
But she's concerned about his welfare. So they have a scene right after the hospital where they're outside, and she's like, I don't want you to fight anymore. I'm really concerned now. I wasn't concerned at all before. Everything seemed okay. But now
yeah,
I'm really worried.
Very emotionally invested after one dinner and one night of sleeping together.
Yeah, and seeing one guy that she's vaguely acquainted with get beat up, and in spite of all of the other people she's been witnessing be beat up, that doesn't bother her. But she doesn't want him to fight against Chong Li. She's very concerned, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna do whatever, you know, I gotta do this because my father, and you know, it's just like how you're a journalist. And she's like, what does that have to do with anything? And then he says, well, how'd you get into journalism? And she's like, oh well, my dad was a journalist, and I was a writer, and so I just figured it was the right thing to do. And he's like, "Yeah, same thing for me." And I'm like, "Okay, same, yeah." So she goes to the police, and he goes on his bus ride thing, and then you know, she convinces the detective, and there's the confrontation in the alley because they don't want him to go to the thing, and then the ricochet off of the trash can lid that he picked up super fast and deflected the shots into the other people, and then they all give up, and then they go to the thing, he faces off against Chong Li, and it's the final thing, and Chong Li has little tablets put into the upper part of his waistband area by a guy who has some sort of wound on his hand. I'm not sure if you're going to do a close-up on somebody's hand, if you could maybe just get someone else to do it who hasn't like suffered some sort of injury recently, because that seemed strange.
I must have missed that part.
It was on his knuckle. I was just staring at his knuckle.
I saw that he put the Mentos in his waistband, but I don't know why.
Yeah, well, fresh goes better. Mentos freshness.
maybe his fighting shorts were getting a little ripe from 3 days straight of fighting.
They go up there to do their final battle, and there's a lot of kicking in the air and stuff and punching and things, and then finally we get to the good part. He smushes up the tablets into dust, and it goes into his face, and then we get the slow-mo of the, oh, what, in the face, and oh no, what, and there's more cats meowing at this point, and he falls to his knees, and he's shaking, his hands are moving around. We're cutting to what his point of view is, which is just this out of focus view of the stadium. And so it's very dramatic. He can't see anything. And then it keeps going on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And I feel like they could have trimmed that down. It was very easily communicated that he couldn't see anything by the POV shot. And
well, it was all in slow motion, so it took a little bit longer. But he's getting hit from all sides. He has no idea what's going on. And then finally, he's able to calm himself and close his eyes and get back to his pouring tea level of focus and listen, use his ears and stuff. And he begins to fight back just by listening to when the punches are coming, and I don't know, maybe it's some sort of ESP or something.
Really great acoustics in that stadium for listening to punches.
Well, you could probably feel the steps on the little mat there or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know what they say, one crushed up Mentos to the eye and you're Daredevil all of a sudden. But so he catches it and deflects and then starts punching and kicking back. And then he finally does a couple aerial kicks, mainly with just his toes, to knock out Chung Li. And he falls to the platform thing and he's the victor. Everyone's cheering. Forrest Whitaker is super excited, and he's won. He won the kumite. He's got the sword. He's got the katana. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
Meow. And so they then go to say goodbye to one another, and he says goodbye to her, and he's going to get on the airplane, and then he's at the airplane first, and he's like, "Oh, you guys are so slow. LOL." And then the agents are like, "Oh, shucks." And
yeah, because like, this whole time he's been saying, "I'll meet you at the airport in 3 days. Leave me alone." And then they're waiting outside there, and it's like, "Oh, is he going to stand us up?" And they're waiting and waiting, and then he's up on top of the thing. And it's like, "Guys, what are you doing? We're waiting on you." And then they go in, and he's standing on top of the platform, and Janice shows up out of a bus.
Yeah, the United bus drove her over.
Right, and then they from a distance across the tarmac, like, salute each other or something. And then we don't know what happens next because it just freeze frames, and then we get the stats about how Frank Dukes actually did these things, and he had 390-something undefeated matches, and he has the record for the fastest knockout and the fastest punch for a knockout and the fastest kick at 70-something miles an hour. And some other stuff that's nonsense.
Yeah. It's a real Goodfellas ending there. and so they end on that note, and we get the song and the credits roll, etc. All in all, this movie is ridiculous. And
it is ridiculous in a fantastic way.
I just wish it was... I wish the beginning, especially the beginning, was just more condensed than it is, because even with all the other ridiculousness and the bad acting and everything, just the lingering shots of nothing happening really kill any sort of urgency or a sense of desire or to want to watch the rest of the film.
This movie really feels like a late 70s, early 80s movie made by some company that, well, they are completely out of business, but just some like completely nonsense company that you've never heard of before. That it's the kind of movie that like Quentin Tarantino is the only one who has seen and or owns a copy and like references it in all of his movies. But like it's so cheesy in the like, how do we craft a cinematic story from nothingness kind of way, that it's so evocative of this era of just ridiculous movies. I love it so much.
Oh, Dan, remember when I said that Marc Dassault co-directed Kickboxer a year later mm-hmm. with Van Damme?
Mm-hmm.
And I said it was co-directed with someone named David Worth, and I didn't know who that was.
Mm-hmm.
It was the cinematographer on Bloodsport.
Yeah, you just you put some names. You take the names from Bloodsport. You put them in a hat and you stir them up and you pull them out and you just put them in different positions.
Yeah. Now I kind of want to see Kickboxer.
All right, let's watch it. Wait, which production company made that? Is that a Canon movie?
Canon did it too.
Right. Let's keep it going.
Yeah, Canon and Marc Dassault, they just kept running.
I mean, they were so high on their Van Damme success.
I'm not sure the Van Damme success is a powder that you can inhale through the nose.
Wait. Is Kickboxer the one where they... Oh, it is. It is. Okay, so this movie is the one where they do... It's like, again, it's like a battle to the death. But if I recall correctly, their last fight scene or whatever, they... they put these like... cotton glove, like sticky gloves on, and then they put the gloves in this giant vat of crushed glass, so they're like fighting with like broken glass on their knuckles.
Okay.
Oh dude, it is so just nonsensical 80s kung fu movie style, just like we have to do this.
Well, you seem very excited all of a sudden.
we did a run of Stallone movies. We can do a run of Van Damme movies now.
Oy.
I want to watch Kickboxer.
Oh, there's a lot of...
It's only 5 more minutes than Bloodsport.
I'm sure it's just 5 more minutes of reaction shots from Jean-Claude Van Damme.
It's basically got the exact same rating, too, which is spectacular.
Well, I find it hard to believe you'd put all these same names into a hat, stir it up a year later, and you wouldn't get exactly the same result.
I mean, presumably, if nothing else, the film stocks improved, so they weren't quite so grainy. I'm super excited now. Oh god, but they need to bring back kung fu and ninja movies, but like really cheesy bad ones.
I don't want to spoil this for you, but there's the very real chance that they might be happening, but they just might be direct to video, so you don't know about it.
Well, I did see something when I was searching in here. There's a Kickboxer Retaliation. Oh, that has Jean-Claude Van Damme in it. 2017, Kickboxer Retaliation.
I'm sure that's a seal of quality.
He is directed by Dimitri Legothetes. I don't know
sure.
who this is.
We'll go with that.
He directed... Yeah, nothing important. Wow.
Okay, what are you wowing about?
Whenever this comes out, we'll have to watch this too.
Okay.
Wait, there was another movie, Kickboxer Vengeance? When did that happen?
Last year, apparently.
What, did that have Van Damme in it?
Yes, as Master Durand.
Oh, so he's the master now, of course.
I don't know how it works.
I mean, they made, what, 6 Rocky movies?
I suppose.
Yeesh.
Yeah,
kung fu is better than boxing anyway, so they're both equally unintelligible.
Okay. No, but let's just talk about a fun fact that I didn't know about from the BuzzFeed article that you had sent me, which is that Bloodsport was not his first role, but rather he had a role in 1979 in a movie called Woman Between Wolf and Dog as moviegoer / man in garden, uncredited. And then he received a minor role for some appearance in a movie called Monica Forever, which is a French film, as gay karate man in a minor role. And that was in 84. And then he did something called No Retreat, No Surrender as Ivan Krushensky. So I'm assuming he didn't use his Belgian accent for that one, but I don't know. And then he went on to do Bloodsport. And that's really, I think, probably what kicked off his career.
We have Bloodsport to thank for Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Also, I want to point out something. Somehow, between the release of Bloodsport... and the release of Kickstarter a year later.
Kickboxer?
Yeah, that one.
somehow between Van Damme starred Kickstarter.
Yeah. you have to try to get to certain milestones, and then you'll get like certain bonus perks. You know, Jean-Claude Van Damme will sign something. I don't know.
Early bird backers get 2 Tums tablets to keep in your waistband to throw in people's eyes.
Yeah. Well, the early bird is a funny thing you should say, because in 88, after Bloodsport, there was Black Eagle. And then in 89, there was Cyborg before he did Kickboxer. So In the span of 2 years, he did 4 movies where he was an athlete. That's rather impressive.
I feel like we should just pick all 4 of the movies on his IMDb page under the known for section. So we've got Bloodsport, Kickboxers there, Universal Soldier, and then Double Impact, where based on, I don't think I've seen Double Impact, but based on the artwork and clicking on it, it appears that he plays twins.
Oy.
Hang on, I'm going to actually read this. So twin brothers are separated when their parents are murdered, but 25 years later, they reunite in order to avenge their parents' death. Double Impact, 1991.
Okay.
Oh, what's his name's in it again?
Which one?
Bolo Yang, who played the bad guy in this. He's in that too. Awesome. He's my favorite.
I have a question, though. I'm looking at Jean-Claude Van Damme's Wikipedia page.
Mm-hmm.
And for Bloodsport and for Cyborg, there is a notes column on the table here, and it says also editor uncredited for both of those films.
Editor.
Yes. I have a question.
Is your question, was he actually running the movie or was he just sitting behind the guy going, no, 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 cut it there so it looks like I actually kicked him?
Yeah, because I'm having a hard time imagining him doing a lot of the day-to-day editing, so I'm not really sure where Wikipedia sourced that from, but I wanted to do some more research on that before we get into Cyborg or Kickboxer.
Dolph Lundgren's in Universal Soldier.
Yeah. You didn't know that?
I don't think I've seen that. So I'm saying we should do all 4 of those.
Yeah. Do you know who directed Universal Soldier?
I don't.
Roland Emmerich.
Okay. I've seen parts of Soldier, which was the Kurt Russell movie later, which is equally stupid around the same time period, if I recall.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen Time Cop. Have you seen Time Cop?
I saw a little bit of Time Cop when I was young. My parents were watching it, and then there's a part with a naked lady in it, and they covered my eyes, and they made me leave the room.
Have you seen Street Fighter?
Oh, of course.
Okay, just check.
Let me see. What year was... Time Cop. I don't know how old I was when that happened. Time Cop, 1994. So I was 10 when that came out. Okay, I probably shouldn't have been watching that. Is it rated R? Yeah, okay. Oh boy. He grew a lot in 6 years from Bloodsport to Time Cop.
Okay.
Like his ego / persona grew a lot, like not in terms of like depth of acting ability or anything.
Yeah, well,
Peter,
good for him. I think that about wraps it up for us today, though. Yeah, I'm having a chimay to celebrate his premiere of his thing, this thing.
To celebrate Bloodsport / the t-shirt.
Yes, both. So.
Oh, God, Jean-Claude Van Damme, he had a cameo on Friends, I forgot.
He's had a lot of cameos. People like to cast him as himself in things because they think it's funny.
Yeah.
Because he's such an outrageous caricature of a person. So they like to have him show up.
He was apparently in Kung Fu Panda 3.
Yeah, and 2.
I haven't watched, have you watched his Amazon thing, Jean-Claude Van Johnson?
No.
I haven't either.
I read the reviews that it wasn't that good, so.
Oh, I follow the guy who made that on Twitter.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He seems nice.
Okay. Good for him.
I don't know about the movie.
I didn't see Expendables 2. Have you seen Expendables 2?
I have not seen any Expendables, and I have no interest in watching them because they're going to do nothing but tarnish my memories of these horrible old movies that I love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, speaking of tarnishing, ta-da! We're done.
Ta-da! The sport has been bled.
Yes. Yes.
It's a weird way to say it.
Yes, it is. Take it.